Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and we both welcome you back to another important episode of The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find everything you need at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, you told it to me in a way as the protest rising meme, and as I looked at some of these stories, it's true, and we see it all around, and we'll cover it yet again. So we'll begin this week in Brazil. As protests erupt over public services, Brazil experienced one of its biggest nights of protest in decades this past Monday, as more than 100,000 people took to the streets nationwide to express their frustration at heavy-handed policing, poor public services, and high costs for the World Cup. The major demonstrations in Rio, Sao Paulo, Brasilia, Belém, Belo Horizonte, Salvador, and elsewhere started peacefully, but several led to clashes with police and arson attacks on cars and buses. The large turnout and geographic spread marked a rapid escalation after smaller protests last week against bus price increases led to complaints that police responded disproportionately with rubber bullets, tear gas, and violent beatings. Coinciding with the start of the Confederations Cup, a World Cup test event, the rallies brought together a wide coalition of people frustrated with the escalating costs of persistently poor quality of public services, lavish investment on international sporting events, low standards of healthcare, and wider unease about inequality and corruption. And James, it's in a way, as you read through that, that could describe many, many countries in the world. But that's not all. We also look at the BBC. As Bulgaria's Prime Minister Plamen Oresharski has apologized for a political appointment that plunged his three-week-old government into crisis. His appointment of a controversial media mogul, Delyan Peevski, that's P-E-E-V-S-K-I, as head of the National Security Agency, provoked days of street protests and prompted the main opposition to boycott parliament. There had been outrage that Mr. Peevski was given access to top-secret files. The 32-year-old is understood to be behind a newspaper and TV empire and was nominated by the ethnic Turkish Junior Party in the governing coalition. Tens of thousands of people took to the streets of Sofia, Bulgaria, and other cities for 5 days to oppose his appointment. James, that just kind of initially strikes me as if, you know, Obama would appoint Michael Bloomberg's younger son to the head of the National Security Agency. But before I hand it right back to you, James, a little bit of an update to our Turkish riots story of 2 weeks ago, I believe, here on New World Next Week, and we take it from the CBC. Turkish official approves standing man protest. Turkey's deputy prime minister on Wednesday, that was June 19th here in the States, gave a nod of approval to a new form of peaceful resistance that's spreading through Turkey as police were questioning dozens of people rounded up in police raids. Although police dispersed pockets of protesters who set up barricades in two Turkish cities overnight, sometimes violent anti-government demonstrations had largely given way to a passive form of resistance with people standing motionless. Hundreds of protesters stood still for hours on squares on main streets in several cities, mimicking a lone protester who started the trend on Istanbul's Taksim Square on Monday and has been dubbed the Standing Man. And James, in closing, Turkish Deputy Prime Minister Erink said, "This is not an act of violence. We cannot condemn it." James?
Well, very interesting. And look, I know all of these protests are taking place in different places, in different contexts, for different reasons. So I don't want to simplify them or group them together when they don't, in ways that they shouldn't be. But I think if there is any sort of thread that we can weave throughout all of this, it strikes me that I've said on this program and my other work besides many times before that I don't think the solution is going to come from marching on Washington with a bunch of pitchforks and demanding the government do something about the problems of society. But let me refine that. I still stand by that. I don't think that is going to be the solution. But let me refine that idea, because when you take a look at the types of crowds, for example, in Brazil, it is absolutely staggering to see the number of people who have turned out for these protests. And that is the type of thing that cannot be ignored. And regardless of what you think the solution is, even if you do think that the solution is ultimately going to be from demanding more from the government as a way out of these problems, no matter what you think the solution is, I think the very first step in this truly has to be to tap into the outrage that should exist over all of the abuses that we see going on. And with all of the scandals breaking right now in the American context, it is staggering to think how few people are at that point of outrage right now. And I think that speaks to the absolute taking away of that basic human reaction to these types of situations, where everything has been papered over with this, oh, let's all sit here and talk calmly and nicely, and don't raise your voice because people might be scared by you or something. The way that the society has been turned in that direction, I think, is truly detrimental. And I don't think that the solution is going to come from marching on Washington and demanding things. But at any rate, if we don't tap into that outrage that should exist over these scandals, I don't think people will be motivated to, A, snap themselves out of their own matrix and to actually start doing something like building up the alternatives. But B, also, I think the passive crowds, the 97% of the population that never ever joins in on a revolution until it's already underway, I think they're going to be looking at this and seeing everyone acting nice and calmly and accepting everything that's going on and just and going with the flow. So I think there has to be that moment of outrage, and it is being tapped into in country after country after country around the world. And I hope that people in America and in Canada and in Japan and in everywhere else in the democratic Western world would look at this and start to realize that just sitting there passively and accepting all of this is not natural, and it's not healthy. It is not healthy to just sit here and talk calmly about these issues. So I think outrage can be a good motivator to at least get people out of their matrix, to snap them out of their conditioning. So my hat's off to the people out there who really are trying to take this to the streets and trying to at least wake some people up to what's going on.
And I'll even just maybe throw in closing on this first segment that, of course, the amazing protests that met Barack Obama in Berlin today. I especially enjoyed the "Yes, we scan" banner. Having said that, James, let's move to our second story this week. And again, I feel like this is somewhat of an update to a story that we hit just a couple of weeks ago. Journalist Michael Hastings dead, and it sounded like a bomb went off. So we'll grab this from our good friend Jack Blood and DeadlineLive.info. Investigative reporter Michael Hastings has died in a very suspicious and fiery car crash, or more likely explosion, in the early hours of June 18th in Los Angeles, California. This was the same day as the NATO handover of security forces NATO's handover of security to Afghan forces, which that supposedly occurred, which, of course, could more accurately be called the handover of insecurity, since, of course, it was greeted with predictable bombings. But back here in Los Angeles, in the States, Michael Hastings had been highly critical of the Afghanistan war, those who promoted it, those who profited from it. Michael Hastings' article for Rolling Stone magazine got General Stanley McChrystal fired. He later trashed General David Petraeus for running death squads to increase sectarian violence, and more recently trashed Barry Satoru for his drone program. One of Michael Hastings' most dangerous articles exposed how the U.S. Army was using a PSYOPs team to manipulate senators during their visits to Afghanistan. Hastings' final article for BuzzFeed was titled, "Why Democrats Love to Spy on Americans." Michael Hastings had obviously made many enemies within the U.S. military, so his death by intense fiery car explosion that left his car engine I've seen in some places 50 to 60 feet away from the crash site, which sounds like a complete impossibility, means that this should probably be thoroughly investigated. That is, if there are any journalists left to investigate this story. James, before I throw it back to you, it's interesting to note, KTLA.com. One woman in the area described it sounding like a bomb went off in the middle of the night, and a man said, "I couldn't have written a scene like this in a movie with the engine flying 50 to 60 yards from the car." So I had that wrong, actually, 50 to 60 yards, hundreds of feet. James, Michael Hastings, dead.
Well, let's bring in the latest. WikiLeaks just tweeted, Michael Hastings contacted WikiLeaks lawyer Jennifer Robinson just a few hours before he died, saying that the FBI was investigating him. So even if this wasn't in extremely suspicious circumstances like that, I think it behooves us always to look into the mysterious and untimely deaths of young, intrepid reporters who actually are trying to do their job, at least to a certain extent. So we should always be casting a suspicious eye on events like these, but especially when he is being looked into and he's getting in touch with lawyers saying the FBI's investigating him. He ends up dying in a fiery car crash a few hours later. A car crash that sounded like a bomb went off. I think there's a lot here, and where there's smoke, there's fire, and where there's explosions, there's bombs. So I hope that that this story doesn't go away, and I hope it's not swept under the rug. But again, we'll have to wait for more details, and hopefully there will be some more journalists left who will be able to investigate this. But when you think of, again, all of the abuses and outrages that are coming out right now, including the abuses and outrages of reporters and the fact that they're being spied on and monitored and their communications are tapped and they're being followed and they're being investigated and now they're ending up dead on the streets. Unfortunately, this shouldn't be surprising, but once again, I think it's another reason why people should be outraged at what's happening right now, and that's why we have to be on this story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I was referring to is the story we just covered, I believe, 2 weeks ago, and that was journalists apologizing for ruining Gary Webb's career. And of course, Gary Webb's career ended in 2 gunshots to the head. So, James, having said that, we'll move to our third and final story, which in a way I think segues quite interestingly. And as I was telling you, James, off camera, this story was in the mainstream American press all day today. It really surprised me. So we'll take it from Fox News. TWA Flight 800 crash was caused by missile, say former investigators. A handful of aviation experts, including a number of investigators who were part of the original probe of TWA Flight 800, have come forward in a new documentary to say evidence points to a missile as the cause of the crash off the coast of Long Island 17 years ago. The New York to Paris flight crashed coming up on, it'd be next month would be one of the anniversaries. The New York to Paris flight crashed July 17th, 1996, just minutes after takeoff from JFK Airport, killing all 230 people aboard. In the weeks that followed, the plane was reassembled in a hangar from parts retrieved from the sea. But the cause of the crash was not identified immediately, and after authorities said the crash was caused by static electricity igniting fuel flames, many skeptics cast doubt on that theory. Adding to the controversy were multiple eyewitness accounts of a fireball going up from the ground and hitting the plane before it went down, accounts which the FBI dismissed at the time. It's obvious that the truth was not allowed to be pursued. The half dozen investigators whose charges will be fleshed out in a documentary set to air July 17th, the anniversary of the crash, say they were never allowed to get to the truth, but they are confident a missile brought down the plane. We don't know who fired the missile, said Jim Spear, an accident investigator for the Airline Pilots Association, one of a half dozen experts seeking a new review of the probe, but we have a lot more confidence that it was a missile. The group is comprised of people who worked for the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, TWA, and the Airline Pilots Association, all of whom have since retired. All 6 say that the evidence shows the plane was brought down by a projectile traveling at a high speed. And I spoke to someone on the phone tonight while I was screening calls for Ground Zero, a guy calling from New York. He mentioned this story, and he said, yeah, the Coast Guard was running military drills, and they shot a missile up, and that's why this plane went down. Again, James, the fact that this was in the mainstream media all day, only pushed down by the death of James Gandolfini of The Sopranos. That's pretty much the only other story that's topped that here in the States today.
Well, it is a big story, so you would expect it to be covered, but then again, the press doesn't do their job, and that's why you would not expect it to be covered. So it's interesting that it is, but I think people should also be wary of the fact that there are already there are already planted alternative theories to the takedown of TWA 800 that actually only serve to bolster the entire war on terror narrative. And I'm referring to Peter Lance's theory that he advanced, for example, in Triple Cross, where apparently Ramzi Youssef brought down TWA 800, or at least people connected to Ramzi Youssef, and he had done a test flight, basically from the Philippines to Japan, where he blew up a small bomb, but it didn't bring the plane down, and this is supposedly a bigger version of that. So if they start advancing that narrative, then all of a sudden this becomes about, well, the Clinton administration wasn't doing enough in the war on terror, et cetera, et cetera. So it only serves to bolster that whole narrative. The important point is that there are multiple and in some cases highly accredited witnesses to the missile tracks and seeing the explosion itself. So I think that there are very few people who have looked at the evidence that don't believe that TWA 800 was the result of some sort of explosion that had nothing to do with static electricity and fuel vapors. But exactly which alternative theory is going to be pushed and how it's going to be brought to the public's attention is, well, something that I guess we'll have to wait and see, and see if this gets diverted into a war on terror propagating myth.
James, as you were just mentioning that, I did a quick search of Peter Lance Ramzi Youssef TWA 800. So I'll include the results of the Wikipedia page for TWA Flight 800 Alternative Theories. James, having said that, I think we will wrap up this 158th episode of the Neural Next Week, which again, neuralnextweek.com has everything you need, high quality, low quality audio, video, the documentation, the sources, everything you need. And also, please support our friends at paradigmshift.tv.
Absolutely. Let's leave it there for now. Talk to you again next week.
Thank you.